Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Herbie, hour two. Let's go. Hour two of the program. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I'm glad that you are hanging out here with us. We've been talking a lot about what's going on in the NFL. We did a little bit of Bears discussion. There was some Cubs news yesterday, and I wanted to get into it. And when I do, I like to talk with people who are around the team, know what's going on. And Gordon Wittenmeyer, for sure, fits that bill. He joins me on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park. Gordon covers the Cubs for the Sun-Times. He does an incredible job doing it. Gordon, how are you today?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I appreciate you jumping on. I know that you got a lot of work to do, and you're trying to also get rest before the whole slog of the MLB season comes up again. But with the news about Addison Russell, I wanted to talk with you, and I read the stuff that you wrote in the Sun-Times about it. I want to know, what went into the decision for the Cubs to non-tender Addison Russell yesterday?
Well, Theo talked about that this was essentially a baseball decision, and certainly for what he figured to be on this team, either a platoon second baseman, backup shortstop, possibly a regular second baseman low in the order, he was going to be he was going to make more money than they were willing to pay. Okay, so that's part of the equation, but I think we all know what the fallout was like when they kept him a year ago. And for a team that is desperately looking for a new direction, it fired its manager, changed three or four of their coaches, completely overhauled the player development department, and now is looking to make some major changes on the roster, sticking with some of the old guard and some of the old baggage was definitely not going to fly. I mean, there was no surprise in this whatsoever. In fact, anybody who thought that he had a chance of returning before September got a message pretty loud and clear when they put him on that concussion injured list almost a week into the actual concussion at a time in the season when it had no bearing on the roster. And the end result was he missed a $100,000 roster bonus by 2 days. So that was the only reason to do that. And once something like that happens, you know, that's a lot more than the writing on the wall.
Even in Theo's statement after he had talked about this, he talked about supporting Addison and, more importantly, his ex-wife, Melissa. Why do you think being involved in this was a good or bad idea for the Cubs as an organization?
Look, I think Theo probably handled this from a public relations standpoint as well as any executive could from at the beginning of this. The thing that I would have done different, the thing that I think was a mistake, the red flag mistake that they made, was when they kept him a year ago. I think that was a baseball decision too, honestly. I think that they thought they were still in a window with a chance to win that year. They had their team intact. They thought he brought something to it. He wasn't easily replaced as a baseball player at that point. So I think that was largely a baseball decision too, once it got that far. But clearly it was, he didn't add anything to that team. And you could make a pretty strong case that there was a destructive factor to it, or at least a distraction factor to it. And he certainly didn't perform on the field, which I think was probably fairly predictable knowing his track record and how he'd handled things in the past. So I would have tried like hell to make a trade for him, a low-level trade, something. If you wanted to do what was right for him, for his family, if you wanted to do everything that was right in this process based on what he had done in his domestic violence suspension, and you felt responsible. How many times did Theo say, "This happened on our watch"? Then you could have engineered some kind of a trade that gave him a job somewhere, which would be good for his family, maybe in a lesser market, and then continued to participate behind the scenes in getting him right. You could have done that, and nobody could have said you weren't doing the right thing if you did that. And that would have been the actions that they have talked like they have done ever since, with the lone exception of he would not have been a part of this baseball team, and that would have been probably the best way to go.
What do you think they learned from this?
Well, I'd like to think they learned that they're going to – well, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think they probably learned at the highest levels of the organization how big a factor, how big of an impact some of these off-the-field things can have on your actual team. But I don't know why you wouldn't continue to go case by case on this kind of stuff. Look, Aroldis Chapman, they still take heat for that. And from a clearly baseball standpoint, they went and acquired him as a rent-a-pitcher. He did everything they expected, and they won a championship. That was flawless from a baseball standpoint, a professional standpoint. It would have been front office malpractice not to make that acquisition, given the fact he'd already served his suspension, given the fact he was eligible, given the fact he was available at the price he was, and so on. And yet they still take heat for that. It's not quite apples and oranges, but there's nuances to all these decisions. And I think they're going to continue to be treated as case-by-case cases.
Gordon Widmeyer covers the Cubs for the Sun-Times. He's the beat reporter for them, does an incredible job doing it as well. Let's talk about Addison the player. Gordon, what happened to him? Because after the World Series, we saw a decline that kind of went off a cliff in 2018 and 2019 with some really like inexcusable mistakes in the field, whether it's him fielding or him running the bases. How did he become a worse baseball player?
Well, he, in some ways, he's kind of the classic case of what Theo referred to right at the end of this season when he talked about looking back instead of looking forward, doing the same things and thinking they're going to work again. He was, if not literally the youngest player on that team, he and Al Mora were the two youngest players by a matter of months. On that team, extremely young players. He was an all-star starter. And you can debate whether he deserved it or not all you want. But that's what he was, and in his mind, that's what he was. He had a grand slam in the World Series. He's got the trophy, the most coveted trophy in American team sports history. And coming off of that at such a young age with a guy that probably wasn't as equipped maybe to handle some of that or to sort of apply the same sort of self-focus and self-discipline as some other players, it probably affected him as much or more than anybody else. And then we come to find out going into 2017 and into 18, certainly throughout 2017, some of the stuff going on in his private life behind the scenes the chaos that was going on, self-created. You're talking about a guy that maybe is more easily distracted than certain other players in the first place, and then he has all these things going on, most of them coming back. All those young players had sort of built-in attitudes coming off the championship anyway, and all that conspired when it came to his performance level, probably a perfect storm to drown that performance level.
Gordon, I want to ask you about some of the other guys on the team and some that have been rumored to maybe be on the move. Specifically, I want to start with Chris Bryant. What is the relationship like between Chris Bryant and the Cubs? Because I think a lot of fans, they don't really know. Like, is he still mad about the service time issue? Does he want to be a Cub forever? Does he expect to get Nolan Arenado money? Where does their relationship stand?
I think when the service time issue came up, that was a punch in the nose to him. More so even than not getting called up in September the year before when he deserved it. And he wasn't too happy about that either. But when he didn't make the team out of camp, when they promised him he would have a chance, and then came to discover, if he didn't already know it, that it was completely business, it changed, I guess, maybe some of his idealism, I guess, as far as playing the game and the track of his career. So I don't think that he, like, to this point in time, I think he's come to accept that and grown awareness in how the game operates. I don't think he holds it personally against them. He certainly sees it as a flaw and a wrong within the system. Certainly he looks at it, they didn't have to do that, and they did it to him. But I think personally he has a good relationship with the people running the team. I don't think that's an issue. But he's certainly not. If they can treat it like a business on the front end, he can certainly treat it like a business on the back end. And I think that's what you're going to see. He's not giving him any hometown discounts. He's going to want what he thinks his market will bear. And if that means going to market, then that's what he's going to do. And if that's what he's going to do, and if he makes that clear, and pretty much to this point he has, then they have to look and see where they're going to get the value out of that. Is the value keeping him through the end of the club control, or is the value in whatever they can get in a trade between now and then? That's why, naturally, he's in all these trade rumors. I think he's going to remain in trade rumors all through the winter. A deal might happen. It depends on how fast markets move. We're already seeing kind of the free agent market move better than it has the last couple of years, earlier than it has the last couple of years. That could influence it. My feeling has always been, my guess has always been, that he would be more likely to be moved if he's moved this before 2021 at the trade deadline.
Okay. All right. Well, then, as far as all the stuff, there's a lot of noise about the Cubs, and there are other, you know, sources around baseball and other front office people around baseball that are kind of talking like the Cubs are out there trying to sell off some of these guys. Would it make sense for having a new manager in the building and a team that's been pretty successful with a core of four or five guys to run it back and keep the guys instead of trading them for the 2020 season?
It makes no sense to keep them all. It makes no sense to consider this a championship core and just ride with it another year. That makes zero sense to me. This is about a 500 team as it's put together right now. Now, a lot of the reason for that is pitching. Some of it's the other guys. So you have to look at what your needs are. You have to look at, around the league, at who got better and where you have to get better, and then you have to go attack those points. It also makes no sense to blow this up. You've got way too many guys that truly are talented that are under club control, so you might as well try to work within that, build around that. Retool, bridge season, whatever you want to call it. The problem is they've got no payroll flexibility, and the guys on big contracts can't be moved because they're bad contracts in most cases. Even the good contract, the John Lester contract, it's at the end of that contract, so he's not worth what he was at the front end of it. So you've got some real challenges here. That's why you're hearing all these rumors. They are asking people who they want and for what. A lot of guys on that roster. That doesn't mean a lot of guys are going to get moved. That doesn't mean they're blowing it up. That doesn't mean specifically this guy or this guy is being shopped. It means they're listening to every way possible to try to get this team better for a longer stretch than just the next 2 years.
Gordon, what does the changes that have happened within the front office signify to you?
That they're behind the rest of the game. That the front office fell behind technological cutting edge of technology and, you know, biokinetics, if you want to go there, the medical field. You saw that some of the more successful teams, at least in terms of from March into October, the Houston Astros, who won the one championship and got close a couple other times, are at the cutting edge. They're the teams that have been out front on some of these the more technical side of the game, and the pitch labs and the hitting labs and the biokinetics, some of these 3D models that they're using, and even getting into even trying to quantify players' makeup. I mean, that gets kind of scary. I'm convinced, if this isn't already being done, I'm convinced, you know, the next frontier is going to be some sort of measuring based on DNA, like measuring a player's potential, including DNA analysis. And you know, once we start going that direction, I mean, it's already kind of scary. It's going to be even more so. But this was a front office that, in the early 2000s, you know, the Moneyball movie, right? This was the front office that was in the center of that, at the front end of the new proprietary computer models and quantifying performances and projections and market inefficiencies. And they were at the front end for several years. Then they were kind of with everybody else because everybody else caught up. In the last few years, 5 years even, some organizations have gone off ahead of everybody else, and they're not one of them. And so that's what we're seeing in all the reorganization.
It's a little bit surprising, too, because considering the mess that they walked into, and just having talked to people there, where you're talking about scouts not having internet on their phone and, you know, some of this stuff like in filing cabinets, that they got the Cubs up to a level where they weren't just with everybody else, but they were ahead. How surprising is it that they fell behind? And
I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't take that lock, stock, and barrel as fact.
I mean, the
Cubs front office was remarkably small compared to other front offices around baseball, especially big market front offices. And yes, they were not, they certainly weren't near the front end. You know, the Yankees, right? The Yankees have the money. They can go swamp you with resources. But they also were at the front end of technologically with everybody else and constantly looking. Yes, the Cubs were behind in that regard, but it was less of a teardown than it was just simply building it up. I mean, everybody got computers. Video was installed everywhere. A different emphasis on scouting, and now you're off and running. So, I mean, it's not as simple as that, but it's also not as simple to say that this was a colossal mess that they inherited. I mean, go back and look. I mean, when they actually had competitive payrolls, never the top payroll in the game, but commensurate with their market, they were competitive with other teams. They came close before. At the end of the day, it's about the players.
Well, let me ask you about the manager. What types of things do you want to know about David Ross, and how long will it take to learn those things about him?
I want to know how good a quote he is as a manager first.
Well, he's going to have a hard time living up to the guy that used to be here.
I know, right? Well, we were told that the big thing that he's going to have to show is that we were told that he's nobody's puppet. He's his own man. He wasn't groomed for this job, that they kept an open mind during the process, et cetera, et cetera. And we were also told that they wanted a shift away from kind of the, I guess, relaxer. Joe's approach was not burn these guys out the first half of the season, start to accelerate as you get toward into August, in the middle of August, and then sprint in September. Worked pretty good for a while. It's worked in other places. They felt they maybe weren't getting enough on the accelerator all the way through the season, or enough hands-on from the manager for much of his 5 years here. That's what'll be interesting to watch. Is there how much more hands-on? How much discipline is added? Are there more rules? How much publicly will he hold people accountable? That'll be interesting to see. And just if there's a different, different vibe or in the clubhouse, a different sort of tenor as these guys approach things, that'll all be interesting. I don't I I couldn't begin to predict how it's going to play out on the field in terms of results, no matter what we see. But it'll be interesting to see, just sort of compare and contrast him compared to the last guy based on what the front office said they wanted to change. And we should have a pretty good idea by the time spring training's over, and I would think certainly within a couple months into the season.
Gordon, this was a delight, man. I appreciate you making time for my show.
You got it, man. Anytime.
I'll talk to you soon. That's Gordon Widenmeyer, who covers the Cubs for the Sun-Times. I like Gordon a lot. He's a funny dude, and he's got an edge. And I like my Cubs coverage with a little bit of an edge. It's good. I think it's good for the Cubs overall. Yes, Herbie?
He's right when these people came in, Theo and them, he's like, you know, how, why are you guys believing these guys? And the Ricketts, he held them to task until they've proven what they can do. He's a reporter. He's a journalist.
Yeah,
he doesn't just swallow things whole that people give him.
In the truest sense of the word, I think that he is that. And it is interesting because with the Cubs, what the Cubs, I think, are going to say is, you know, we don't have an operating budget. And I think that a lot of fans are going to be like, wait a minute. What you mean y'all ain't got no operating budget over there? And they're going to tell you, well, I mean, we have it, but this is what we've budgeted for baseball operations, and we're not going to go above that budget. Well, wait a minute. What about the other teams that are doing that? No, we're not doing that. We wanted to win while they were young and inexpensive. We are not here for spending a ton of money, although maybe they will. Maybe they'll end up extending Javier Baez. But I think he's right about the Chris Bryant thing. I think that the approach on Bryant is this. He is a nice guy. He does like all the people that work there. He was taught a lesson about the business of baseball, and he has learned that lesson. And now he's going to apply it. Oh, it's business. Got it. You're right. It's business. And he'll smile and he'll take pictures with everyone and sign autographs. But the business part of it, he's taking to heart. And God bless him for it.
And I, like you always say, I understand that, you know, people gravitate towards the team instead of the player. But in this case, it seems like most of the fans are gravitating towards the owners in front office than to the player who was done wrong. I think done wrong.
It's pretty amazing.
And also, they like denigrate Chris Bryant for being the guy that's, okay, they did it to me. I'm mad, and I'll get mine.
I'm going to get mine. I'm going to do it with a smile, but I'm going to get mine.
And they don't want him to get there. It's like, well, trade Chris Bryant. Yeah, out of the core four.
He's ungrateful.
Hit. Yeah.
No, he's supposed to get paid.
They took one of his really huge money-making years away from him for 12 games.
Well, maybe that's the thing that we should be emphasizing for the fan, that you could have had a year Chris Bryant earlier and maybe a better version of Chris Bryant.
They did it legally, but also legal doesn't mean right.
Yeah, it doesn't mean moral. This hour is being brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the number for kids. I have a little bit more on that, but there's also a Bears thing that I want to discuss with Herbie and Mike Chen about whether or not it makes sense for them to make the playoffs. We'll discuss that next here on The Score. Seeing the Seahawks receivers do a new addition last night was pretty funny. I didn't realize that Joe Buck was married to Michelle Beisner. She did a feature with them, like working on the dance before the game on ESPN. It's pretty funny that they got a chance to do that. Good for them. I love all the people that are syncing up the video to the performance. That was pretty good, too. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. They host number 3 Michigan State at the new Welsh Ryan Arena on December 18th. Tip-off is set for 7 p.m. Tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team or until now at nusports.com. The Chris Bryant slander continues via the text line, as per usual. Someone texted in, I think it's an interesting text, about the idea of, well, he's not having a pure Kurt Flood moment. He's a puppet. Well, Scott Boras, as I've said time and time again, is someone who has an agent. The agent works for me. I don't work for the agent. And I think that it's possible that both things are true. I think that it's possible that Chris Bryant feels that he has been wronged and thinks that it should be better, not just for him, but for his entire Players Association. And Scott Boras is like, yep, sure has been, and I'm going to get real rich on the players that take up this cause. Both things can be true. I don't think that it's fair to doubt his veracity in that regard. The other thing, and I love this, well, he's injury plagued. He had one season where he played 108 games. You know he played more games last year than Anthony Rizzo did?
Don't you dare talk about Mr. Cub like that. And by the way, they did steal that name from Ernie Banks.
Wait, Anthony Rizzo is Mr. Cub
now?
Oh,
my goodness. So many people, because he played on a broken ankle or a sprained ankle.
Oh.
He's the new Mr. Cub. Can't get rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, look, guys get hurt. But even at the time, I was sitting here going, he rolled his ankle. That whole thing was fascinating to me. I don't doubt that Anthony was hurt. We saw it. We saw it play out. But how many times have we seen a basketball player roll their ankle, go in the back, get it taped up, and come back and play?
And play basketball.
Right. Run and jump sport. How many times have we seen a football player roll their ankle, get the tape cut off, get it retaped and spat it up, and go back out there? How many times have we seen hockey players get hit in the ankle with a stick and be like, ah! And then they go on the back and they do whatever it is they do back there, and then that guy doesn't miss a ship.
Well, Lawrence, obviously you haven't played at a high level. You know, playing baseball where you got to put the foot down and the ankle takes a little torque. You know.
Yeah. It is funny to me that Chris Bryant kind of represents everything that you would want in a player. And there is a contingent, a loud contingent of Cubs fans that are like, nah, he's not Mike Trout. No, he's Chris Bryant. And he's a 25 WAR player in his career. But he's not Mike Trout. Well, no one's Mike Trout. Like, in the history of baseball, no one's Mike Trout. It's like that guy and Babe Ruth. That's it. And Barry Bonds. But, you know. The Bonds thing. It is the most perplexing thing. And I say, hey, if we're already going to get the handsome pitcher, let's get the handsome third baseman over to the south side too. I mean, if the Cubs are legitimately calling people, call Rick Hahn. We can find a place for Chris Bryant to play.
Don't they need a second baseman? We have one.
Oh, you Slappy?
Yeah.
The slap hitter that all White Sox fans are in love with. We got to get Nick Madrigal to the majors. Why? So he can hit 215? I don't get it. I am stunned by how White Sox fans have just like been like, no. Lou Bob. I mean, yeah, he's going to be great, but you know who else is going to be great? Nick Madrigal. He's going to be our Dustin Pedroia. I'm good. See, Mike, time for baseball thoughts, in December.
Just compare all the songs. You might as well throw Jose Altuve in there, too, right?
That's what he is.
That's a good comp, right?
That's better because he's small.
Short second baseman, right?
Absolutely. He's small, so he's going to end up being that guy. Yeah, that's better. But the Dustin Pedroia comp is the one that you keep getting. He's going to be Petey. Slappy. But yeah, I feel pretty comfortable, and White Sox Squadron can let me know. I feel pretty comfortable in saying if the Cubs would like to give the White Sox Chris Bryant, that we be for it. Come on home, brother. Come on home. We got a place for it, and that's why I've been joking on the show that Chris Bryant has a pet dog named Comiskey. Because remember when free agency started last year, you thought that Bryce Harper was going to be a Cub because he had a dog named Addison or whatever, Wrigley or whatever it was. So I'm just going to start the rumor. Chris Bryant has a dog named Comiskey. White Sox, steak dinner, boom. So Jed, Theo, if you're listening, trade him over to Southside. As a matter of fact, you can have Aloy back. How about that? You can have him back.
I'll give him the other people.
Not gonna give him Aloy?
The Flete and Rose guy.
No, you gotta. Okay, let's whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. But I don't understand it. I just don't get it. He doesn't play it hard. Get out of here. He's so good at baseball. Okay, heads, help, head, 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 head. 3, 2, 1. Help spread the warmth. Join Burlington's annual coat drive through January 20th. Donate a coat at any Burlington store to help your neighbors in need. As thanks, receive 10% off your purchase. Find your store at burlington.com. I'm guessing that my bear stuff is going to have to wait until tomorrow. That's okay. We got more shows. We'll take a break. We're going to talk with McNeil and Parkins coming up in a few minutes. I'm Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score. The Bears still have a lot of guys that are on the injury report. And if you're talking about guys not practicing and the game's Thursday, that could be problematic for Thursday night's game against the Cowboys. I'm very much looking forward to this game, though. I like it. I like that we are in a space where for a few more days, it might only be, 56 hours or whatever, that we can even entertain Bears playoff talk. But so what? Sun's finally out in the city? What if the Bears win on Thursday night? Man, Friday is going to be great if they win on Thursday night, because people are going to be like, oh yeah, Mardi Gras time in the city. By the way, McNeil and Parkins, who I'm going to talk to next, they're going to be doing their show from Tavern in the Green in Evergreen Park on Thursday night to get you ready for that Bears game from 2 until 6. For the Miller Lite What's on Tap broadcast, find out what's on tap for the Bears game. Enjoy Miller Lite specials and take some Score swag home. Brought to you by Miller Lite. Hold true. By the way, I've said that 3 times now. There is a Q-Tip mixtape called The Abstract Volume 1. If you're a Tribe fan and you want to get like a real history of A Tribe Called Quest, you should check out that mixtape on SoundCloud. Speaking of mixtapes, Chris Tannehill did a mixtape for Black Friday. He's done, 3 times? This is Black Friday mixtape. It is banging. When Chris Tannehill gets on the tables, it is something special. And if you like that hip hop, Tanny got you covered with his Black Friday mixtape. I'm going to talk McNeil and Parkins. Probably not about the Black Friday mixtape, because I don't think they'd be completely lost, because I don't think Mac listens to hip hop and Danny doesn't listen to music. So I think it'd be lost on them. Don't make that face, Mike Chin. It's true. He'll tell you.
He doesn't not listen to music.
He doesn't like music. Is not his thing.
Weird.
It's a little strange, but that's his thing. We'll talk with those guys coming up next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.